Thanks for listening to the Calgary Real Estate Investing Podcast. If you have any questions about buying or selling in Calgary and the surrounding area, please reach out. We'd love to connect with you. We can also help if you have any questions on specific real estate investing, like how to buy a rental property, legalize in a basement suite, house flipping, plus a personal favorite of mine is how to maximize the sweat equity in your current home. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe and leave a five-star review. It would be really appreciated. Hey, Grant, I just want to welcome you to the Calgary Real Estate Investing Podcast. I'm super excited to have you here today. Can you start off, maybe just tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and what's keeping you busy these days?
Hi, Corey. Thank you very much for having me on. It was great to meet you at the Flames game the other day, and we actually won that game, so it was all a real bonus. My name is Grant Kelba, born and raised here in Calgary. I've always lived in the southwest part of the city, have done a number of different projects and thoughts and jobs over the time that I've been here. All my education is here in Calgary. I really haven't strayed very far from my roots of Altidore, Oak Ridge, Signal Hill, Lakeview, those communities. I've taken a lot of those experiences and applied them to my real estate business.
I got to ask you, so in the Southwest, how much impact have you seen with the Ring Road? How much has that improved?
It's phenomenal. I live in Oak Ridge myself, and I have been waiting for this ring road since I was in high school. They've been talking about it. I was one of the first people waiting at the barricades when it opened up with that first leg through the reserve. And then the other day when they opened up the final leg on the west side, I was there as well, even drove around the barriers just so I could be one of the first people on the road. I gravitate to the ring road more than anything else. And I'd be really interested to hear or see just how it's impacted the traffic patterns on Anderson Road, Southland Drive, 14th Street, Glenmore Trail, and Crowchild, those being the main arteries prior to the Ring Road in the Southwest. Even Sarcee Trail, for example, you don't have to go on any of those roads anymore to move around the south part of the city, or even south to north or north to south. That Ring Road has been just a godsend. I think it's affected and impacted a lot of people in a positive way.
Yeah, as realtors, we really appreciate that, being able to get around the city much more stress-free and easier. Okay, let's dive into your backstory. I think this is pretty cool. Like meeting you at a Flames game, and we were sitting by you and we saw that you were wearing a ring, the fancy, looked like a Stanley Cup ring. You being a friendly guy, we start chatting and find out you're in real estate and commercial and residential. And that you were the creator of Harvey the Hound. So I'm like, wow, this is awesome. So I got to have you on my show and find out more about that. So can you tell us the origin story?
Yeah. And I guess a little bit further about me. I've always been an entrepreneur. I've always looked at opportunities and taken advantage of them. It's Harvey's 40th birthday on February 16th. To go even farther back than that, I was friends with a buddy of mine in high school, and he was performing as Ralph the Dog for the Calgary Stampeders at the time. This is prior to the Flames ever even coming to Calgary, and the Stampeders were the only show in town. And he said, "Geez, Grant, you seem like you've got the right kind of attitude. Would you like to start performing as Ralph the Dog?" And I thought, hey, that's pretty cool. It pays $7 an hour. So that was good money back then. I thought, yeah, I'll give that a try. And so my entire training to be a mascot consisted of, this is how you put on the costume. And over the course of the next 4 years, I performed as Ralph the Dog throughout high school and college, eventually working up and starting to do Stampeder football games. And it just really seemed to have a knack for that. And I really enjoyed it. I really had a great time. I wanted to do more with the character. I wanted to do more events, more charitable work, more of everything. And the management of Ralph the Dog was North Hill Shopping Center at the time. They said, just do what we tell you to do. And there's 10,000 people in the city that want your job. So just shut up and do what we tell you to do and leave it at that. And I said, okay, that's not the way I operate my life. So I thought, I'm going to just create my own character. And thus started the process of creating something for myself that I could use for myself. I was also very fortunate to have a connection through Don Waldorf to the Calgary Flames, who had just moved into this brand new building called the Olympic Saddle Dome. And they said, I don't know if a mascot's going to work at an NHL hockey game. It's very different than football. But why don't you go and talk to the Flames and I'll set up a meeting for you with Al Coates, who was the PR director at the time, and go down there and talk to him. Early in that first season at the Saddle Dome, I was 23 years old and they set up a meeting with the PR department at the Flames. And I go into this meeting and I sit down at the table and immediately they drop a stack of mascot proposals that are about 6 to 8 inches thick in front of me. And they slap them down and they said, "So how does yours differ?" And so I took a few seconds and I leafed through them and I saw some of the characters and whatnot. And I went, okay. And I pushed them all back across the desk at them. And I said, "I tell you what, let me create a character. Let me do this thing and just show up at a game. And I'll take all of the management, all the questions, all the concerns, all of the costumes, all of the costs associated with this. And I'll take all the risk. So if it doesn't work after a game, after a period, after a couple of games or after a week, you can let me go and you're not stuck with a $4,000 costume. I'll just take all of the risk away from you and let me just do this thing." And so they contemplated and they looked at me a little bit and they said, "So there's no risk to us. If this doesn't work, we can just move on." And I said, "Yeah, I'll take it all." And they said, "Okay, go ahead, go do this." So I got my permission. So I went home after the meeting and went to my mom and I said, "I get the opportunity to create my own character here." And she said, "So now what are you going to do?" And I said, "I don't really know. So I better get my act together here and get started." So I started putting my thinking cap on and came up with some ideas and concepts. And I wanted him to be a dog because a dog is man's best friend. I wanted to make him in the, the image of a sled dog. So a Siberian Husky, a part of a team, the link between life and death in the North, very Canadiana, very cute, beautiful dogs. So I said, okay, I'm going to make this Siberian Husky dog. And that's how it's going to work. But I never built a costume before. And I had no idea who could build a costume for me. So I started the process myself. And I researched all the various materials and things that I had available to me here. And so I ended up buying 6 sheepskin pelts and I sewed them together to make Harvey the Hound's costume. Uh-huh. I also used Easter egg molds to make his eyes, and those little blue balls inside there were ping pong balls that I painted blue. So I really put together a hodgepodge of a costume.
How awkward was it? So you built this costume and obviously like for breathing, how warm was it? How difficult was it for you inside to perform in that costume?
It was brutal. As you can imagine, wearing 6 sheepskin pelts and then running up and down the stairs of the Saddle Dome in a outfit that you cannot see out of, you cannot hear, you cannot breathe. But I had been used to this. I had been performing as Ralph the Dog, so I knew what to expect. Doing a football game when it's 32 degrees out, you expect to die out there. And
Yeah.
So that's the origins of Harvey the Hound. And just a little sidebar there. I was walking into the Saddle Dome just prior to the game on February 16th, 1984 on a game by game experiment. And I had 2 garbage bags over my shoulders and I was walking towards the Saddle Dome and I went, "Geez, I don't have a name for this character I have in this bag. What am I going to do?" And as I walked past the Calgary Corral, the old hockey rink there, our junior team at the time, the Calgary Wranglers, had a fan club called the Hockey Hounds. And I went, "Oh, the Hockey Hounds, that's interesting." And then the Notre Dame Hounds is a very storied hockey school franchise in Saskatchewan. So Hounds, hockey and Hounds goes together. But what should I name, give him his first name? And I went, "Carl, Fred." I didn't want any hard sounding consonants. I didn't want the Carl. I didn't want the Chris or anything like that. It couldn't be Ralph because Ralph was our mayor at the time. And that would have been silly. So I thought Hounds. So Harvey the Hound. So from one end of the corral to the other end of the corral, I came up with Harvey the Hound.
Wow, that is some last minute brainstorming. That's incredible. Even the fact that you went to the meeting and really didn't have a proposal, a plan in place at that point, you were just proposing that you're going to do it, take the risk away from them and let them see how it goes.
Yeah, I look back now and boy, what a ballsy thing to do for a 23-year-old to take all their proposals and these were coming from marketing companies and artists and designers and everything else. And just to dismiss them and push them back across the table was a pretty cocky thing to do.
The time that you spent at the Stampede with the Stampeders, right, that would have been really helpful to build your confidence in that you could do this. You get in that costume and you get the heat and the stairs and you got to run up and down and perform. Most people wouldn't be able to do it.
Exactly. I wouldn't have gotten the meeting if I didn't have a good reputation going into the meeting as a performer. And I was having a lot of success being the performer at the Stampeder Games. I was offered a part in a movie when a director was up here. And I was in a movie with Jim Carrey way back in 1983 called Finders Keepers.
As yourself or as Harvey the Hound?
As myself.
Okay.
And so I had a lot of opportunity. I had a good reputation going into it. So that was great. But what Harvey the Hound did at the time, it was a game-by-game experiment where I took all the risk. And here it is 40 years later, and he's been at every game ever since.
Amazing. I did some research myself, and because you spoke of this game in February 16th, 84, right? And the Flames actually won 10-3 that game.
Yeah, they played the Pittsburgh Penguins before Mario Lemieux was in the league.
Wow. And then and Lenny McDonald was still playing then. He got a hat trick that game, it says.
Yeah, and so did Doug Risebrough, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. Pretty incredible. So do you think that helped them to accept Harvey the Hound? You started off with a bang, with a big game.
No, I Harvey the Hound and what happens on the ice and the Flames' success or lack of success, there's no correlation between the two. Harvey was there for the non-hockey fan, the kid, the fringe hockey fan. I knew who my market was. I knew who I wanted to entertain. I didn't want to go there and get in the face of a hockey fan or a fanatic. Those people were there to watch the game. I was there to add entertainment when the whistle went or on the ice when the Zamboni was out there.
Yeah, that's true. I never thought of it that way. And did you have a drum back then as well to get the crowd going, that kind of thing?
No, that took a little bit of time. When you're on the football field and the whistle blows, you have a lot of time to attract a lot of attention. And you're out on the sideline there and people can see you. In the arena, in a hockey game, you can't be readily seen. And so when the whistle blows, you have maybe 30 seconds or a little bit more to get people's attention. So I figured out how to do that is by getting a drum. And then I got a big dog bone to hit that drum. And boy, I went through a lot of skins over the years.
Yeah, it's amazing. At the game we were at, I know that nowadays that you have the big screens and they have the boards and all those different things. Harvey the Hound's there, but he's not the center of attention that he would have been back when you were doing it.
Oh, a huge difference. The nature of the game is different. The nature of how they put the games on is completely different. If you recall, prior to the Jumbotron, when the whistle blew, you had a trumpet player, a fiddle player, Harvey the Hound, and canned music or the organ. And there was no Jumbotron. So I was able to express myself. And I actually controlled what was going on using the drum. Willie Jewson, the organist, and I had a cadence set up where when the whistle blew, I hit the drum in a certain way that sort of cued him to either give the cue to the fiddle player or to the trumpet player, or he would take it himself. So it was really a system that we developed ourselves. And so for the first number of years, from 84 until 96, when the Flames got their Jumbotron, I ran the place. It was my doghouse. I did anything and everything I wanted, and I had the greatest time, and I killed myself out there doing what was necessary. And everything changed when they got that first Jumbotron, and it changed again when the Flames started listening to what other teams were doing for their entertainment packages.
Yeah, I can see that. You must have some stories. They would rappel you down from the roof rafters. Did you ever end up getting injured doing it?
Oh, all the time. Yeah, but no one could see my face, so it didn't really matter. First of all, my relationship with the Flames was very much of do whatever you want. And my attitude was, I'll do whatever I want and I'll apologize later. So when it came to rappelling down from the catwalk there, I set that up. When it came to standing on the boards or running along the glass or bringing in certain props and everything else, I just did what I wanted and, you know, let the chips fall where they may. I have during my time there, I had separated both shoulders at different times. I had bruised my kidneys. I blew my knee out, struggled to get off the ice, struggled to get out of the stands, to get underneath, to get some respite. But yeah, I had a few injuries. You can't help but get some injuries. I was pretty abusive to my own body back then.
It must have kept you in great shape too.
Very much. I believe I was the perfect person to perform as Harvey the Hound because I came from a very strong athletic background, but I cared more about the kids and the fringe fans and the people that were there just to accompany the hockey fans than I did care about the players or the hockey or the game or anything else. I really focused on the kids.
Yeah, that's amazing. Because of the success you had being the first mascot in the NHL, you had other teams reach out. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that was quite the compliment because as I was going there in the very early years, I started getting calls from other teams, not just in hockey, but from other leagues as well, asking, hey, where'd you get that costume from? We'd like to get something like that. So I was like, geez, I have a full-time day job. I'm playing Harvey the Hound evenings and weekends. I don't really have time to start up a costume manufacturing company, but boy, it'd be great if I had my own costume manufacturing company because then I could get my costumes built right here as opposed to me trying to perform and build my own costumes. So I partnered up with a friend of mine, Glenn Street, and we created Costume and Mascot Design. That name should make him laugh, actually. And so the two of us with another minor partner got the company going. We started building mascots and costumes for companies and organizations all over North America.
So which mascots would you have had some influence on?
It became very early on in that company. It became very evident that we needed to focus. So I focused on Harvey. I took Harvey and to where he needed to be. The costume and mascot company was changed to Street Characters, and it's still going strong now. It has produced probably several thousand mascots for pretty much every team in every major league in North America and around the world. Continues to do so for organizations, corporations, and so on and so forth. So one of the things that I'd like Harvey to be remembered for is not only was he a successful entertainer, but he was successful in business because not only the business of Harvey the Hound, the merchandise, the appearance revenue, the sponsorship revenue, and all of that stuff that Harvey generated for me at the time until I sold him to the Flames, but also the money that he's brought into the city by way of manufacturing these costumes right here in Calgary. And now there's two manufacturing costumes or companies here in Calgary that are sending mascots out all over the world. So there's literally thousands of man hours, people hours, and millions of dollars that have been pumped into the Calgary community, all because of Harvey the Hound's original idea.
Yeah, that's incredible. And are you still involved in some capacity then on the manufacturing or
no.
ownership or anything?
No, I moved on from that because I needed to focus on Harvey. So Glenn's done a fantastic job with it ever since.
You only have so much capacity, right?
Yeah.
Can you share maybe a few memorable interactions, stuff that stands out to you?
Wow, I could write a book over all of this stuff that's gone on. Things like Mike Vernon giving me ideas and concepts of skits and whatnot. And I'm like, well, aren't you playing? Don't you watch what's going on? How can you watch me and play at the same time? And we'd have a giggle about that. Or the time I came back to my dressing room and there were like half the Flames players were in my dressing room trying the costume on to see how I could see out of this thing. So that was interesting and fun. I remember going to the All-Star Games. I went to 7 All-Star Games. My very first All-Star Game was in the old Chicago Stadium. They brought me down for that. The NHL took me down for that. And that was so successful that they started bringing mascots to all of the All-Star Games after that. I remember being in Madison Square Gardens at the All-Star Game, getting ready to go on the ice to perform. And as the All-Stars were coming off the ice after one of the periods, one of the guys just dropped his shoulder and hit me right in the chest and threw me up against the concrete wall. And I was like, oh, of course it didn't hurt or anything like that. But I was like, okay, what hockey player would drop his shoulder and hit Harvey the Hound in the breezeway from the ice. And so I gathered myself and I looked down the hallway, and there was Wayne Gretzky with this big, huge smile on his face. So he finally caught me.
How did you end up in real estate?
I've always been an entrepreneur. As I indicated earlier, I had a DJ company when I was high school and college, as well as playing Harvey. And in the early 90s, I saw an opportunity here on this thing called the internet. So I created a travel company in the early 90s called Resort to Fitness, and I sold health and wellness vacations exclusively off this thing called the internet, using Netscape and old technology and clunky 28.8 modems and things like that. And it was working out very well. But I still had some time on my hands now that I had sold Harvey. I didn't have the responsibility of the merchandise and the sponsorship and everything else. So I thought, what else can I do that is entrepreneurial that will still allow me to be a family man, but also allow me to play Harvey, that also allowed me to cultivate Resort to Fitness? Why don't I just get my real estate license? So that's when I first got my license, was way back in the 90s. And then Resort to Fitness took off and other things took off, and I started doing e-commerce for some large companies and whatnot. So I let my real estate license lapse at the time, but I loved it because you're an entrepreneur when you're a realtor. Be prepared to work hard. Be prepared to be creative. Be prepared to be different. Be prepared to do the things that someone who goes to a wage job is not going to do or not going to be prepared to do. You have to sacrifice. You have to work hard. And it separates the wheat from the chaff when you don't do that.
Yeah, I agree. I was just envisioning Harvey the Hound giving out his real estate cards to hockey players as he walked by.
Yeah.
Hey, I hear you're getting traded.
Yeah, I didn't want to be the first one to give him that information.
That's right, yeah. And so now you've been a realtor for how many years?
I fired up my license probably about 8-9 years ago. I started in property management. I was managing some ranches around here. I managed the Rafter 6 Ranch when it was in receivership there for a while. Got into some other Bearland condo ranches south of the city, southwest of the city. But people started asking me more questions about real estate and so on and so forth. I thought, just get your real estate license going again. So I got my residential license, and that was going well. But something that really captivated me was the business end of things, and really looking at how entrepreneurs and other people could buy and sell leases and buildings and things like that. I moved into commercial from there. And I do, although I have all these licenses, I really focus on my commercial license.
In what areas are you focusing on mostly these days for commercial?
I am working with peers who have businesses, who are either trying to sell their businesses or expand their businesses, or look at selling some of their commercial properties, or people who want to buy commercial properties. And so using my circle of influence and having deep roots in the community, now people are turning to me largely because they see me as more than just a realtor. They see me as someone who's been an entrepreneur, who's been on the front lines, who's tried to run a business. And so I look at it, their industry or their business, in a more holistic fashion rather than just looking at the real estate end of things.
Yeah. I think you're very creative as well for the stories that you shared doing your online internet selling. That's way ahead of the curve.
It was pretty funny. I still use the same internet service provider that I started with in 1994. That's a shout out to Lexicom, by the way. I remember getting my first email address and looking at my keyboard going, now what do I do? Nobody I know has an email address. I really don't know what to do with this. But by 1995, I was getting 100,000 hits a month off my website. And we became the second largest health spa travel agency in the world by 1997. And it was all based out of here in Calgary. And I hired all my staff through the Canadian Paraplegic Association because I could set them up in their homes. So I was setting up home-based businesses. setting up home-based businesses for people way back in the early 90s.
That's incredible. Now, looking back, do you wish you would have maybe done more online stuff in different capacities?
No, technology is fickle. As you can be doing something in technology, there's always somebody coming up behind you to eat your lunch. I would not go back into technology. I blew my brains out trying to take it public just at the dot-com bubble bursting. Got into e-commerce after that, setting up e-commerce web stores for large companies like Encana, for example, Encana Oil and Gas. They had 5,000 employees, dozens of offices all over the place. We set up a virtual store for them where they could come on and buy their coveralls, their golf balls, their coffee mugs, their golf shirts. And we had a fulfillment house, and it all their product that they ordered through their VPN was delivered to their office within 48 hours. So we saved companies millions of dollars by centralizing the purchasing. And that kept me busy from about 2000 to about 2010. And then I got back into property management.
But that's quite an incredible career path that you've had. It's one of a kind.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm not done yet. I really love working with people to not coach, but analyze their business and listen to their business problems and see if I can help out some way. And what their intended path that they want to go is not necessarily the right way of moving forward. Sometimes you got to be pretty creative and really break the mold. And that's what I've been doing all my life, is killing sacred cows and changing the way business is done.
Yeah, that's so awesome. Offline, you shared a statistic about new realtors in Alberta.
Yeah, when you and I were talking about the real estate industry and how easy or difficult it can be, a lot of people, the layperson thinks, yeah, it's really easy, you know, to get in real estate. You drop your $2,000, get your license, and you're off to the races. That's great. And there's over 13,000 realtors in the province here. But from 21 to 22, the number of realtors who got their license went up 175%. So there's a lot of people out there thinking that this is the road to riches. You get some listings, or you get a buyer, and you go out and you start selling property. But 80% of realtors usually quit the business within the first 2 years. The staying power and the attrition rate is really high. It's not an easy industry to carve a niche in.
Yeah, I would totally agree with you. After COVID, some of these realtors were making money hand over fist. And it just, there was a lot of inventory, and there's a lot of deals to be had and transactions. But now for 2 years, we were in a low inventory market in Calgary. And it can be quite a struggle to get deals done on the buying side.
Oh, no kidding. If you've got a listing, you're gold. If price it right, and someone will step up and buy it. It's a great time to be a seller in this seller's market. But if you're a buyer or working with a buyer, good luck, man. Take your rabbit's foot with you, because when a listing comes on and it's priced properly and it's in the right community and the right for your clients, you can bet that there's going to be half a dozen or more other people looking at that same listing and throwing unbelievable amounts of money at properties right now. It's really tough to be a buyer's agent.
People used to step back at maybe the condition of the house or the signs of maybe moisture in the basement, where the buyers would run away. It seems like it's not deterring them anymore. Houses are going into unconditional multiple offers. When you look at it, and you're like, this is crazy. Not all situations, but it can happen.
Very much so. And the other thing that is happening as well is, and I'm sure you've had experience, because I know a lot of other realtors have had experience, we're selling homes using FaceTime. The clients aren't even in the province, and we're walking and doing showings using FaceTime technology. And we've all done that. Everyone's done it. So you're not just competing with people who are in this local market. You're competing with people coming from Vancouver and Toronto who want to buy something in Calgary.
100%. Yeah. There's a new condo building that was released, or it's going to be done in the next 3 years, but they're pre-selling. And they're over 40% sold. And we're hearing it's no longer Toronto. There's probably some Toronto, Vancouver, but we're hearing like Hong Kong and that kind of money coming in and just buying these units.
Oh, absolutely. And there's that foreign buyers ban has been extended for another 2 years. But I'm sure there's companies and organizations and people trying to get around that. I believe that people in China are trying to get their money out of that country as quickly as possible. They don't really care what they're paying for. They just want their money landed somewhere and secured here in Canada, as opposed to it losing its value in their home country. And that's just not China. We're talking other economies around the world. So Canada is still, and Calgary and Alberta in particular, is still considered a very safe investment. That if it goes down, it won't go down too much. But I've got my kid here. She's not going to be able to buy a house unless she gets help from her parents, because the costs of homes are just going up exponentially compared to wages. So it's not like it was when I was a 20 something, you could actually buy a house on a wage. Now you can't do that without help.
Yeah, that's 100% true. My kids are 13. I'm thinking the same thing for them. What kind of pressure is on the commercial real estate right now in Calgary?
It depends on the segment that you're looking for. Of course, office space, that stuff is around, certainly downtown, although the vacancy rate has improved significantly. Downtown, urban office space is still available. You can negotiate pretty good deals on that. Being in the restaurant business is really tough right now. So a lot of the restaurant business is difficult just because everything's gone up in price so much and people are dining at home. They're not going out as much. Retail, that's been gutted by Amazon. So that's a difficult place to be unless you have a unique product that people can partake in. Things like liquor stores, of course, you can't get that off Amazon, but you can. They're everywhere, just like cannabis stores. They're everywhere. So you can shop there. Industrial, light industrial, that's really hot. It's really hard to find light industrial properties for at this point.
What would they do in a light industrial facility? Can you give a few examples?
Auto body shops, automotive shops. It's really difficult to find stuff like that. Small manufacturing, warehouse distribution centers, that sort of thing. I know that out on Glenmore Trail and Barlow Trail, their avenue is doing a major light industrial mall out there at the former Prudential Steel facility. That's going to alleviate a lot of the pressure, but that stuff takes time to build. Something that Calgary has unique for it is we're very much an inland port for a lot of products that come in from overseas. So we have some major distribution hubs here in Calgary and in Rocky View. Yeah, there's industrial warehousing, distribution. Those properties take a lot longer to develop. And so we're a little short supply in those.
I think it's also, if you're a long-haul truck driver, they can drive from Vancouver to Calgary in one shift. Is that right?
I can't comment on that. I don't know what the rules are. But yeah, but Calgary has really developed itself into a very strong inland port and distribution center. We've got a lot of major companies who use Calgary as the hub for distribution throughout Western Canada. And of course, our rail system works very well. It's overused, but it works and gets the product from the coast to here for distribution.
Do you think the rail that goes right into Calgary, do you think there would be any plans to relocate that around the city at all? Just throwing this out there. It follows the river and it goes right into downtown.
Like, where will you put it?
I'm thinking about the cost of that real estate and that land. And if you took that train track and went around more to the industrial part on the other side of the city, the southeast side.
It's got to come from the west. You got a lot of really nice acreages and landowners on the south, the west, and the north. Not in my lifetime.
That's true, yeah. Because the same with if you were trying to relocate power lines or something, it's a NIMBY. Nobody wants it in their backyard. Gosh.
No kidding. That's a fight that would take forever, I believe, to try and move that around. Good luck. And I think the same goes for that rapid transit train that they want to go from the airport to downtown Calgary to Banff. I think that is a project that should not go either.
Yeah, for sure. Is there any sort of creative things happening in commercial? You were mentioning about the cannabis, and then we see like the microbreweries are around, and it's nice. And it's nice to be able to go to these little breweries in different places. Do you see any other kind of plays that are using up commercial space?
The cannabis industry is struggling, and the government of Canada, when they put the rules in, they made draconian rules that to either grow or distribute, you had to have leases in place and facilities ready to go before they had ever give you a license. And so you're going to see, and we are seeing a lot of cannabis facilities, grow facilities that are really struggling. Aurora, for example, has sold off a lot of their growing facilities. Cannabis retailers, I don't know, but I don't go into those. And I don't see a whole bunch of people going into those like a convenience store. And you're paying convenience store lease rates. So I think the cannabis retail market, when these leases expire, a lot of those stores are going to close because they just can't afford to keep them open. The margins are just too tight in cannabis to try and justify that lease space and the maintaining and manning it as it goes. That's unfortunate, but that's what we've got to deal with.
It's the changes in the market.
Yeah.
And the other thing we were quickly chatting about too was the AI as a bit of an interrupter, right? So we you can see the changes that are likely going to happen with technology and AI.
I think I use AI, have for over a year now, to communicate with my database. Makes it a lot easier. You got to check it before you send stuff out, but it's incredibly accurate. It's getting better and better. I think real estate is going to be one of those industries that is ripe for disruption. More and more of the tools are being given directly to the consumer. And so to be a real estate agent, you've got to be on top of all of the various technologies and systems and plays and everything else. You have to continue to learn and continue to be an expert within your business. Otherwise, you're no different than the person that owns the property and wants to sell it themselves.
Yeah, that's true. And everybody has that information now online that they wouldn't have had before.
Yeah. Like, what kind of value are you going to bring to the table, whether it be commercial or residential or whatever? It's just not a matter of buying and selling property anymore. You've got to have a lot of other insight and knowledge that you can bring to the table. So it's all about value proposition.
I agree. Anything special planned for the 40th anniversary of Harvey the Hound?
The Flames are, on the Saturday game, I think it's Detroit, starts at 2 o'clock. They have a birthday party for Harvey going on. And so they've actually given me tickets. I'm going to go to that. I won't go unless someone gives me tickets. I'm going to go to that party and see what they're going to do. But I'm not expecting much. I don't see the Flames really spending a lot of time, energy, and effort on Harvey the Hound anymore. They've got too many other marketing and advertising and Jumbotron things going on. So Harvey's role at the Flames game has been drastically reduced. Corey, you and I were there for the New Year's Eve game, and we were looking around. We couldn't find Harvey at all. And so it's really not conducive to a mascot anymore. I would love the Flames to do a makeover on Harvey because he's been there for 40 years. His look hasn't changed. So now it's time to do a serious makeover and maybe spend some resources on him.
That's interesting. I thought as the creator, you'd want him to stay as he was.
You got to change with the times, and it doesn't matter what it is. All traditions have to be evaluated and looked at and see how current and relevant they are. And if they're not, then make the changes. Otherwise, get rid of it.
Yeah, that's true. He's still very appealing to the fringe fans, so as you had mentioned, like the kids and the people that they occasionally go to a hockey game, but they're not real true hockey fans.
Yeah, but why aren't they using Harvey and AI to create some really cool videos or advertising for the Jumbotron?
True.
Why aren't they shooting Harvey in the community and putting it out there on their social media accounts and talking more about the Flames in the community? The Flames Foundation using Harvey more as a point of reference. For it's not just the Flaming Sea logo. Harvey can add a lot more community impact where the players can't, because the players can't always be there, but Harvey's there. Use them.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. I'm so glad we crossed paths and I got to meet you and get to have you on my show. I'm going to ask you a few more quick answer type questions. Mm-hmm. So what type of things do you like doing with your downtime?
I need to relieve a lot of stress because I'm in real estate. So I like to work out. I like my F45 gym. It's a really great community to be a part of. And I go there almost daily.
Oh, that's awesome. What type of workouts do they do there?
Oh, they're pretty intense. But what I like about them is they're scheduled appointments. You have to be there at a certain time. You work out for that 45 minutes and then you're released to go. So you get a dynamite workout for 45 minutes and then you're gone and you can move on with the rest of your day. You book it like you would book a dentist appointment.
You look like you still take really good care of yourself, still fit.
I'm 63 years old. It's always been a part of my life. Like I said, I was an athlete when I was younger. I got my schooling paid for through a wrestling scholarship. It's just been a part of my life. And I try and lead a healthy lifestyle. That's another thing that is an occupation of mine, is to keep moving forward because I got grandkids that I want to be around for.
Yeah, for sure. Do you have a book or a movie you'd recommend?
I just finished the LeBron James book. It was captivating. I loved it. Also, I'm in the process right now of reading Dr. Peter Attia's book, Outlive. So that's a longevity book. Yeah, maybe I'm looking at the end of my mortality here because I want to read more about how to live a healthy life right to the end rather than start to fall apart here in my 60s.
Yeah. Where's somewhere you'd want to travel that you've never been?
Costa Rica. I would love to go there. I may not come back.
I've been there. I did a trip and it was amazing. I want to go back and do an adventure bike tour.
We'll go together. Okay.
We should do it. Yeah.
I'd love that.
Do you have your license? You have a bike license?
Yeah, I do. In fact, I used to drive my Harley Davidson up and down Crow Child Trail in the costume.
Just to take on a little extra risk there.
Exactly.
It's so hilly and windy there to be on an adventure bike and tour. Yeah. It'd be so much fun. Oh, we should do it.
I'd love that. Count me in, man.
Okay. And what's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Through my website.com, KELBACorp.com. Have a look at that. Give you a little more indication of who I am and who KELBACorp is. Thank you for this opportunity to talk nonstop about me.
Thank you. It was a real honor to have you on my show. It was great. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks, Corey.